and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This year's gathering of the G20 reflected strikingly different worldviews. The West droned on about its Ukraine proxy war. The rest, the global South, focused on international stability and economic prosperity. Crosstalking the G20, I'm joined by my guest, Palki Sharma, in New Delhi. She is managing editor of First Post and Network 18. In Guangzhou, we have John Pang. He is a senior fellow of the Belt and Road Initiative Caucus for Asia Pacific. And in Bali, we cross to Carl Zha. He is a political analyst, historian, and host of the Silk and Steel podcast. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's first go to New Delhi. Palki, in preparing for this program, I looked at international media, Western media, media from the global South, and it was starkly different, just like the starkly different viewpoints that within the G20. Bloomberg comes to mind. It was badly managed. It was disorganized. The focus was on Joe Biden, and no one talked about Trump. But when I looked at other media, a lot was talked about and very important, and issues that apply to the vast majority of the world's population. But it's not talked about in Western media. That is one of the striking things about this gathering. Go ahead in New Delhi.
Something. First of all, Peter, thank you very much for having me as part of this conversation. The disparity that you pointed out in the way the Western media looks at issues and looks at events versus the rest of the world has been evident. And if I could use the example or the words of India's External Affairs Minister S. Jaishankar, who said a couple of years back that the problem is that Europe believes that the world's problems are Europe's problems. The other way around, actually, that Europe's problems are the world's problems, but the world's problems are not Europe's problems. That translates to the media as well. And they look at everything through a certain lens, which is very evident. But we saw that other global South leaders, including the leaders of India and Brazil, did point out what are the issues that the world really is grappling with because of the conflicts, because of the policies, because of the rules that a small bunch of leaders tend to make and enforce on the rest of the world. There is a fertilizer crisis, there is food shortage, there are a whole lot of issues that the world is grappling with, and the G20 summit did try to put the focus on that. We also heard from experts, including those from the West, who said that going forward, 70% of the world's GDP will come from the global South. So it's about time that the West took note of the issues that concern the others.
John, it was very interesting, again, looking at Western coverage of it, it was inordinarily focused on the Ukraine conflict. And we've known for over 2 years now, 2 years plus, is that the global South, just as Palki was saying to the European, and that's your problem. You created your problem, now why don't you solve it? I mean, why do you want to bring in the rest of the world? And it was really remarkable how much the bilateral relationship between India and China was focused on in the global South media, but it was disparagingly mentioned in Western media. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, and to add some historical context to this, actually, before this, you know, the two previous occasions when European problems became world problems, right? Namely, the First World War and the Second World War.
Right.
And we could not keep out of it. And it's instructive and it's interesting and truly important that this time we can say, look, this is actually not our problem. These were never our problems, right? Europe has been, and the West has been in that arc of history, an exporter of its conflicts. And so I think when people of the global South reject this, they do it with some historical sense that, no, this is, you're not going to define our issues. I think this is, you know, this media disparity that you're talking about, I think it reflects a certain state of mind, a certain isolation that now characterizes the West. And this isolation is not just in, not just psychological, and it's not just in the sort of increasingly the use of sanctions, restrictions, export restrictions, and so on. It's starting to be a sort of, you know, a bubble, an epistemological bubble as well. You truly start to live in your own world. So this is the kind of we are the world complex right, when you're no longer the world.
That's absolutely true. You know, Carl, a few years ago, I was in Beijing for a BRICS media conference, and we had this fascinating discussion. One of the problems that the Global South faces and needs to overcome is that we need our own Googles. We need our own means of communication. Like, for example, you know, I learn about what's going on in Chile through Bloomberg. Why can't I have a Global South conduit instead of always going through the Western nodes? We need to break out of that, because if I'd only read Bloomberg, for example, I would have thought that the G20 was a complete waste of time and those stupid people in the South can't get on board because Putin's taking over Europe. That's what you would get.
Well, from U.S. perspective, I mean, in many cases, G20 is a waste of time, because most of Western leaders, including Biden, they use G20 as a photo op opportunity.
Yep.
It's a place where they take photos, which Biden missed, by the way, because
yes,
he was late to the meeting.
Carl, he disappeared into the rainforest somehow. But I'm sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
I mean, that's what Biden does. Biden has been a walking zombie for the past 4 years. Nobody was surprised. And then it shows the kind of irrelevancy U.S. on a global stage right now, because we're facing some real issues, including the U.S. supported Israeli atrocity in the Middle East, U.S. wage proxy war in Ukraine, and there's a global food shortage all across the globe.
Exactly.
And this was exacerbated by U.S. interventionism all across the world, leveraging financial sanctions. So, you know, Biden, the rest of the world is looking at this and looking at the photo op and realize, you know what, we don't need Biden. We don't need
well,
U.S.
I see your sentiment here. Let me go back to Palki. I mean, I think the G20 is actually important, because beyond the photo op, because the most important countries, the most populous, the economically strong countries of the Global South, they can sit down and they can confront their former colonial masters, okay? We need initiatives on poverty, climate change, economic prosperity, global economic governance. I mean, these are issues they have to address, because just as you pointed out, well, you know, that's what's going on in the Global South. It's none of our business. But when there's something going on in the West, they want everyone else on board. I think it's a good tit for tat. Go ahead, in New Delhi.
Absolutely. And I think increasingly Western governments do realize that they cannot continue doing what they're doing. They cannot continue to dominate either culturally or technologically. They need a market, first of all, and they need partners elsewhere. And interestingly, with the election of Donald Trump, even Europe doesn't know which partners it can really rely on. So they're all Trump-proofing themselves and trying to figure out who are the allies and who are the partners and how transactional the relationship will be. So there's a bit of a chaos there. And they need partners in the Global South. And these are countries with young populations. These are countries with people who are ready to innovate, who have the hunger, and who have the markets that the West is definitely looking for. We see leaders that until recently were lecturing countries in the Global South on human rights, now reaching out to those very countries in West Asia, in Africa, trying to do business with them. So the equations are changing for sure. I think what is needed is a concerted effort, and we saw that. You mentioned the family photo. It was a very telling development that three leaders, the Canadian, the Italian, and of course Joe Biden, could not make it for the family photo, but the photo did happen. And I think there is a message in there that the world will move on irrespective of who joins the bus.
Yes, because John, the world keeps going on, okay? You're not going to wait for Biden or Maloney or Trudeau. I mean, because, you know, the world has its own issues, and it doesn't have to genuflect to Western leaders. I'm glad the family photo was brought up, because I think it is also very telling. Go ahead, John.
This matter of the world going on is actually reflects a huge structural shift in the nature of the world economy, global power, demographics, and so on. And you know, it's just that Western behavior of the last few years have really exacerbated this, really brought it to the fore. I think it's stunned almost all of us, mm-hmm. The extent to which, you know, there's been a dropping of the masks of Western pretension. Now, you know, at long last, finally, right, could they just stop trying to lecture people on human rights, for example, while abetting or supporting a full-fledged genocide, right? Talk to us about responsibility when you are trying to trigger, you're possibly triggering a nuclear war. So it's ludicrous. However, these issues are brought up very, very sharply right now. And very graphically, I feel as if we're witnessing, just quite a moment in history.
I agree. I think we're all witnesses to an extraordinary paradigm shift. You know, Carl, it's happening. You know, I've been talking about this as long as this program has been on air. But I think we'd all agree in the last couple of years, it's really accelerated this change.
For sure. I mean, Xi Jinping has said in his meeting with President Putin, we are in a unprecedented change unseen in the last 100 years. You and I, we, my friend, we are driving this together. This U.S., on the other hand, has been destroying all the international forum, international institution itself helped to create after World War II. This is why people are now looking to BRICS as an alternative to the U.S.-dominated international institutions in the past.
Yeah, well, you know, Carl, you're getting way ahead of me because that's what I wanted to mention in the second part of the program. But, Palki, I'll start with you. The Western post-war order is basically done. It's faded away. Go ahead, Palki in New Delhi.
Oh, absolutely. You mentioned that you're getting this news from Bloomberg, and it is a fact that the West has dominated the narrative and dominated the channels through which people are informed and form their opinions. But increasingly, technology, despite their best efforts, has democratized information. And so we see things for what they are. We see that the same U.S. justifies an invasion of Iraq in the name of fighting terrorism, but sits in judgment of others when a similar a war or conflict breaks out. The same U.S. tells the world to respect an election result, but decides that the man elected in Venezuela is not going to be called the president, and they nominate someone else as a president-elect.
Well, Paul, I have to jump in here, too. I mean, it's not part of the program, but the election in Moldova was an absolute sham. But, you know, the world goes on for the West, you know, so much for democracy. All right, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the G20. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the G20. Okay, let's go back to John in Guangzhou. I think it's very interesting. Sanctions have already been mentioned here, and I think we should also bring up Western militarism. Is that, you know, the more I look at like the G20, at least aspects of it, particularly like the BRICS, is that the West uses sanctions to get its way, often against international law. But I see these Global South institutions, they're creating barriers, a shield against that. What they want to do is the West thinks the world is afraid of their sanctions, but now we have countries coming together to shield themselves collectively against sanctions. I'm thinking about financial institutions, banking, and like that. So it's trying to cordon off the West from all its ill effects. Go ahead, John.
Yes, I think there is that going on, sort of some cordoning off. But actually, we are past the stage where you even need to cordon off. When you effect a sanction, it's like sawing on the, sitting on a branch and sawing on it. But, it's effective if you're attached to the trunk. But if you're the smaller bit, you fall off. So this, it's a question of who is isolated. And we're well past the time when the West is the center of the global economy. Global growth is driven by Asia. Most of global trade is between the Global South and the Global South. The West is no longer central to the global economy. It's peripheral, and BRICS shows that.
Yes.
You know, at G20, for example, if you're right that this is the point where, the countries of the Global South, can confront those on the other side. In the past few years, it hasn't been a very interesting exercise. You tended to have the G7 sort of go on about Ukraine and then just walk out, etc., when Russia showed up, that sort of thing. you know, it was pretty unproductive. Mm-hmm. But now I think the rest, the global majority, have shown, and I think this is going to be reflected in the G20, that if you walk out, well, we're just going to have take the picture without you.
Yeah.
We're going to go on. So it's not just a question of protecting against it. I think they need to understand they are no longer central to the global economy, not technologically, not even scientifically, right? A study has just come out by Nature, listing the 20, Nature, the scientific journal, listing the 20 major cities in terms of scientific production. The top two are Beijing and Shanghai, Beijing twice the amount of Shanghai. You know, Westerns, out of the top 20 cities, I think 9 or half of them are in China. So, you know, China has already exceeded the West in terms of scientific production of knowledge. So these are things which have happened very, very quickly. And I think people in the West haven't adjusted to it, but moreover have a really difficult time. It's almost pathological, the panic at the loss of this sort of, you know, primacy or centrality. Yeah. When in fact, actually, they don't have to worry. You know,
yeah,
the sky hasn't
fallen John,
down.
You're absolutely right. There is an element of panic there. I think you're absolutely right. Because,
there is panic.
Because that's why you see such an aggressive behavior on the world stage, because hegemony is seeping through like sand in their hands. And they're panicking about it because they don't have any alternatives. You know, Carl, another huge casualty of our time is the end of international law. The genocide has already been mentioned here. We've had wars of choice that the West has committed in this century alone. And again, the global South international law is used against them. It's a cudgel against them when the perpetrators are breaking the law are the West. Go ahead, Carl.
Exactly. U.S. used ICC to go after government it does not like, yet when ICC issues warrants of arrest for Netanyahu, you know United States is not going to comply. And this is a problem. This is a problem. U.S. is actively destroying the credibility of all these international institutions and forums you had to help create in the first place. And this is when people realize, why do we need U.S. in the first place? Because for the past as Joseph Borrell, the famous Gardner, has said, the era of Western dominance is over. Is over. And this is something that President Xi Jinping had made very clear to Biden during their U.S.-China summit just prior to G20. He said there must be correct strategic understanding. The Thucydides trap is not a historical reality. So a new Cold War cannot and should not be fought. And he goes on to say the words must be trustworthy and action must be fruitful. A person cannot stand without credibility. China always follows through on its words, but if the U.S. side always say one thing and does another, it's very detrimental to America's image and damage mutual trust. I mean, Xi Jinping just basically called out America for speaking with a forked tongue here. And this is a very, uncharacteristically blunt message, but I think it's to be delivered to not only Biden, but also the incoming Trump administration.
Yep.
So for them to understand that the time have changed, the table have changed.
Yeah,
the table
but it's the mindset that hasn't changed, because we all know with the incoming administration, Taiwan is going to be the new hot button issue for this administration. It's obvious to me, okay? And, you know, broken promises, broken commitments abound right there. Paul King, again, you know, kind of looking at how the international order is changing, it's really remarkable, again, to see how many countries in the global South have realized they better stay together. If they don't hang together, they're going to hang separately. And I think that that is a trend that is growing. Go ahead.
And I think the realization is sinking in. I was reading some reports and statements. This is from the EU foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, who said that wherever I go, I find myself confronted with the accusation of double standards. This is French President Emmanuel Macron, who said, I am struck by how much we are losing the trust of the global South. And is it any wonder, because the West that lectures the rest of the world about what is right, what is the rules-based order. Today, a report came in that this was the 49th time that the United States has used the veto power to defend Israel and to block a resolution against Israel at the United Nations, and that says something. So you use freedom of expression, you use human rights as a stick to beat up the rest of the world with, but those same rules do not apply, and the world is beginning to not just see it, but also call it out, and that should give the West some food for thought and ideas on how to amend their ways.
Well, John, it's really amazing that Joseph Borrell has been brought up twice on this program, which I haven't been so kind to in the past, okay? But the garden, you know, attending their garden issue. But that tells us everything about the mindset, okay? You can talk to people rationally, but Joseph Borrell just thinks, because he's a European, he knows better, he is better, he's more moral. This is a mindset that is impossible to delve into, you know, to confront.
Let me try to have a slightly hopeful perspective on this by trying to at least see what just happened on November 6th in the U.S. elections as a glimmer of hope in this regard, in that I think this mindset is characteristic of a very, very small, thin, restricted elite. Anglo-American or, you know, Atlantic, North Atlantic.
Or you can say five eyes.
Okay. Five eyes plus, you know, NATO. But I think it's the election showed how thin this elite is, and how thin that ideology really is. And I think it's rejected even in the United States, at the heart of Western power. So that was the big thing. You know, regardless of who Trump staffs his, you know, of these appointments, I mean, those are important. But look beyond at his base. Look at the US. I think the ideology that sustains this supremacism, which is liberalism, is a goner. You know, with the popular West. That's what populism is. It's a rejection of that. And so its popular basis is gone. It's unmasked at home. So this unipolarism, this supremacism, this liberal supremacism also does not work at home anymore. So there's a little bit of hope there, but, you know, it could be really troublesome this period.
Yeah, I think, John, you have a very interesting read on that. I'll go to Carl right now. I mean, one of the things, you know, the West is always telling, preaching about standards and all that, but half of America is poor now, and it's getting poorer, okay? And it's one of the reasons for populism to rise. And so, I think I can take on board what John had to say, but before we get to that optimism, there will have to be a complete breakdown in the West. I mean, Europe is suffering terribly. I live here in Russia. The sanctions have only created innovation in Russia. It hasn't hurt Russia at all. Go ahead, Carl.
Exactly. Like President Putin said during his Tucker Carlson interview, there needs to be a change in the hegemonic mindset of the U.S. elite. If that mindset does not change, then nothing will ever change. And this is, again, highlighted during President Xi Jinping's talk with Biden. He said, we need to treat each other as equals. In exchange between two major countries like China and United States, neither side can reshape the other according to their own wishes, nor can they suppress the other base.
But Carl, do you think an American president can publicly treat the president of China as an equal?
No.
He should.
No. I mean,
he should. No, but he won't. You know he won't.
U.S. do not have allies. U.S. has vassals. This is why right now they're even going after India. U.S. just indicted Indian businessman Adani for supposedly a corruption charge in India. This is United States. U.S. court is trying to indict an Indian businessman for something he has supposedly done in India. And the only reason they are able to do that is because they claim Adani has had some transaction on the U.S. bond market. So using the U.S. financial hegemony, they're throwing the books at everybody they don't like. I mean, this is obvious attempt to put pressure on the Modi government because they didn't like that India is pursuing an independent foreign policy versus Russia, because India is continuing to purchase Russian oil and gas and then resell them to EU at a premium price. And the United States does not like that. But this is going to backfire.
Well, it looks to me that the future ingenious entrepreneurship is coming from the global south, because everybody knew that was going to happen with Russian oil. Anyway, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in New Delhi, Bali, and Guangzhou. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.